All right, folks, welcome back to another edition of The Realist Report. This is your host, John Friend. Today is Saturday, January 9th, 2021. Of course, my website is therealistreport.com, where you will find an extensive archive of these podcasts, as well as other programs I've appeared on as a guest. You will also find all of my blog posts and articles, a contact page, my Twitter feed, which is embedded in the right-hand sidebar of the website, and many other useful and important links. I am a regular reporter for American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, and I also contribute to the Barnes Review, the bi-monthly revisionist history magazine. Please do subscribe to these fine print publications if you do not already. Check out AmericanFreePress.net and BarnesReview.org for all the details. Okay, with that said, let me introduce our special guest today. Angelo John Gage is joining us. Angelo is an anti-war, anti-supremacy, and free speech activist who recently published his very first book titled From the Mundane to the Metaphysical, Observations and Reflections on Life. Angelo, welcome back to the program, sir. It's been a while. How are you?
Glad to be here, John. Yeah, it's been a while, man. And I'm glad to hear you're doing well. And I'm honored to be on your show as well. I think it's the first time I ever call on the show, right?
You know, I think we actually did a show. We first became acquainted back in like 2013. And I remember you had came out with a few YouTube videos at the time that went pretty viral, where you were like denouncing the Iraq war and sort of exposing the fraudulent nature of the global war on terrorism and kind of talking about your experience in the military and stuff. And I remember that's how we first came in touch, and I think we did an interview back then. I know I definitely wrote an article about about some of your activism and some of the YouTube videos that you made. And it's actually still – I was just thinking about that earlier today before we started the podcast, and I couldn't remember if it was actually on American Free Press's website, because I know it was published in the actual print edition of the newspaper at the time. Mm-hmm. And it's a pretty brief article. I mean, it's pretty basic, but it has some good quotes from you. And it's a topic that's near and dear to my heart. You know, the anti-war activism and just the anti-war stance in general is something that, you know, I've felt strongly about from the very beginning. So it's a pretty solid article. I'll actually post a link to it in the comments of this podcast if anybody, you know, wants to go read it. Again, it was published back in September of 2013. But we actually met at the NPI conference back in, I think it was January 2016. Or was it January? It might have been actually like February or March. I can't remember. But it was in Washington, D.C. in 2016, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it was somewhere around that. I just moved into my house. So I was living in Brick, New Jersey. So the drive to Washington was like 3.5 hours, I think. So I remember. But we met there. Yeah. It was good meeting you. I met Kevin McDonald and everyone else as well. It was a good meeting.
Yeah. Yeah. It was,
see people
it was,
in real life.
Yeah, it was cool. I'm glad that you're back. It's like I said, it's been a while, and I know you've still been active. You've had a YouTube channel, YouTube show, and of course you're active on Twitter. You recently published the book that I mentioned. I've heard you on the Ralph Retort recently. I know you've done some shows with Adam Green. So, like I said, you're staying active, and you've always got a pretty good take on things. So I guess just to get started, I mean, we kind of talked about our background, but could you kind of just give us a brief like introduction of yourself, just for maybe new listeners? I'm sure most people listening are familiar with you, but just briefly introduce yourself. That's always a good place to start.
Yeah, my name is Angelo John Gage, as John mentioned. I was in the Iraq. I lived in New Jersey my whole life, but I came from Italy when I was two. So I came here, lived my life in New Jersey. And, you know, I lived a good life. My dad made good money. We lived in Warren, New Jersey when I was around 17, 18 years old. Actually, 4 years of that time, high school years, I was in Warren, New Jersey. So I went from good places, you know, in New Jersey. I wasn't like in like the ghetto or anything like that. Because back in the day, you know, one parent could make good money and the other one stayed home, which was my mom. She was a housewife. But I come from a very conservative, not conservative politically, but old school Catholic family. You know what I mean? So traditional is the word. And so I was raised a Catholic, and I, believed in God and all that stuff, and was like, you know, I want to do good for the world. But I just felt always off with things, even in school. I didn't really care for school. You know, I had the ability to do well. I just didn't care for it. I didn't like the systematic approach. I always questioned things. I was naturally, inquisitive all the time, even when I was a kid. So when 9/11 happened, when I was in high school, I was like, wow, that's crazy. And of course, I believed the narrative they told us. And so when I was 17, I tried to go find a branch to go join. And they said to me, you have to be 18, but you can join at 17 via the delayed entry program. I chose the Marine Corps because it's the most badass one, apparently. And their colors, you know, their uniforms, they really got me drawn to them. And I wanted to be like a Marine Corps sniper or something. You know, I was all Mr. Rambo because I really thought what happened to our country was bad. Terrorism, we got to stop the, terror networks, got to get Al-Qaeda, blah, blah, blah. You know the story. And so I joined the Marine Corps delayed entry program, which is a year prior to your service, prior to boot camp, where you get to know the recruiters, you get to know basic things about the Marines. You go on runs with them, you do pull-ups, stuff like that, like once a week you meet up with them. And they shave a year off your reserve time. So I joined for 4 years active and 4 years would be reserve or inactive where they can call you back, but they shave a year off when you do that. So it was not a bad deal. But once I turned 18, it was May 2002, I turned 18, but I was still in high school. So 4 days after high school ended, I was deployed to, I was taking the bus down to South Carolina. So Parris Island, South Carolina, started my boot camp, 3 months of boot camp, did that, sucked very much, got out, went on leave, went home. And then I went to engineer school. And then after engineer school, well, first I went to Marine Corps combat training, MCT, and they trained. So if you're not an infantryman, because they put me in as an engineer, I didn't get my sniper thing that I wanted. I wanted to be a grunt, you know, but they put me in combat engineer. So I learned how to do explosives and land sweep, mine sweeping, things like that, building stuff. Did that for 3 months or so in the engineer school, graduated. And then February 14th, 2003, it was my first deployment to Iraq, literally on Valentine's Day. And then I did 5 months in Iraq during the first invasion. My unit went in day three after the invasion. And then we, after 5 months, came home. The next year, February 14th, 2004, again deployed, this time to Iraq again for 7 months. To do humanitarian, quote unquote, humanitarian things, which we did. We cleared landmines from roads and IEDs and things like that. So it was an experience. I almost got blown up. Me and my guys in the Humvee, we drove by an IED. The blasting cap malfunctioned. So we heard a pop, but the device didn't go off. Otherwise, I'd be dead. I did see dead people. I see dead civilians. I saw dead Marine people getting in front of me getting blown up. So I've seen war. I got a combat action ribbon, although I didn't engage in any firefights myself. Indirect fire, scene destruction, death, and almost got blown up myself. So I was in a combat zone supporting the infantry. Thank God, John, I didn't kill anybody because it would have messed me up even more than I already am. Trust me. Especially learning
right.
The truth.
Especially, I was going to say, especially coming back and like reassessing everything and taking a second look at 9/11, which of course justified all of this.
Yeah,
and
that's
you know,
what happened.
Just the lies that were told to get us into the war with the war in Iraq were just so outrageous and so easily, you know, demonstrable now. I mean, it's like incredible that anybody fell for this at the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I learned the truth in the last few months of my service. So I was sitting there with my friend Matt. We had bunkmates, obviously, in the barracks, and his younger brother sent loose change. Now I don't agree with loose change fully. But it was the first time I saw the towers again. I never saw them ever again. After, you know, on live TV, I saw them and everything like that collapsing, but never saw it again. I never thought twice. I'm not an engineer. I don't know, whatever. And I saw them again, and they're like, wait, look at this. Look, I was like, whoa, this is weird. So in the Marine Corps, I learned, and then I started doing research on other things. Like, all right, well, that's a lie. What did we do in Iraq? White phosphorus, war crimes. I'm like, wow, we're the bad guys. So I left the Marine Corps learning already that we're the bad guys. And then when I went to community college, which I did pretty well, actually, I got a 3.83 GPA, first 3.63, then 3.83, but I quit. And this is where PTSD comes in. I'll get into that. But I started questioning, and I took philosophy, communications, psychology, and I was like, started thinking differently about everything. So my world went upside down, man. I started going through rabbit holes, 9/11, all sorts of conspiracy theories. And I was like, man, this entire world is just, history is a lie. Everything's a lie. And it really like shattered my reality. And it was a really hard pill to swallow, but I swallowed it and I wanted more. Cause like I said, I've always been inquisitive, even as a kid. I want the truth. So I took that, you know, hard pill to swallow and I went with it for years. And it, you know, I learned more and more, you know, a lot of conspiracies are actually fake, and but there's the real ones, you know, that'll get you thrown in jail or just deplatformed or destroyed. And I learned those later on. But that was the thing with me. I was always inquisitive, and you know, it's a shame that I, you know, fought for Zog, but I remember what I went through, and I woke up as many Marines as I could, and I spend most of my time now trying to wake people up to the lies of the Iraq war, other wars as well, Syria, the bombings there, the assassinated Soleimani, the treacherous politicians that are pushing things all the time. That's what I do. I feel obligated to do it. But I did come home with PTSD. I didn't notice it at first, but over time I would do something. And then even though I did well, I'd quit. So college, I quit twice, meaning I went back to the same courses that I quit the first time with the same teachers with a letter saying, I give him back his grades, he has PTSD, and quit again just before the exams. And then I did energy consulting, was doing great selling energy, helping people save money, quit that. Massage therapy school, quit that. The only thing I didn't quit was NLP course, which I took because I wanted to learn what was wrong with myself. And I completed it. Then I opened my own NLP life coaching business and I quit that. And I'm like, I can't work. There's something wrong with me. So I, you know, went to go to see a psychologist. Like, yeah, you have PTSD. This is part of it. You lose interest in life. You get depressed. You have no motivation. It's hard to be a salesman when you have no motivation. Sometimes you do it. Other times you don't. You can't have a steady income. So I went through all this, John. Then I took some medication, feeling better and stuff like that. But you know, the PTSD for me came later, and, you know, learning the truth didn't help at all. In fact, I taught a lot of my friends. One of my buddies was a Marine Corps sniper. He almost killed himself, you know, not because he learned this. He accepted the truth, but he was depressed and he almost, his girlfriend found him in the shower with a gun in his mouth. And she luckily broke the door in and saved his life. But he was, you know, shocked to learn it, but he accepted it. But again, other reasons for his depression, you know, killing 15 people, that's his kill count. And knowing that they were innocent people, or they were freedom fighters, you know, or he was in a position where he had no choice but to shoot them because they had guns. But there were times he shot them when he didn't, and he misunderstood what they had or whatever. So, you know, thank God I didn't take anyone's life, John, but I know people who have, and it's just, it ruins them. And I try to tell them, look, I told them we didn't know any better. And right. my father told me, I said, Dad, I went for a lie. He's like, you didn't know that. You didn't go in there knowing it was a lie and laughing all the way home. You know, you were duped. And that's how these people control us, through the media. They take patriots. They take people like, you see that Trump thing. We'll get into it. These are people who truly believe what he said. You know, they're not maniacs. I mean, some of them could be, but they take that misplaced patriotism and passion and they guide you into the slaughterhouse.
And exactly. We'll
definitely touch up on that. But
Oh, let me just interject really quick because not only I totally agree with everything you just said, but not only that, I mean, you know, these people, and you could probably attest to this. I mean, when these veterans come back home, I mean, they're not in many cases, a lot of them fall by the wayside. They get hooked on drugs or alcohol. Yes, a lot. You see all sorts of homeless people, especially out here in California. A lot of these people are veterans. I mean, it's like they're just used and abused by the system. And it's all for this either outright, you know, fraudulent wars or this like phony patriotism. Yeah. And it's just so disgraceful. It's such a shame. And it's a very difficult thing for a lot of people to deal with when they're put in that situation. And when you sort of wake up to the bigger picture, I can understand how devastating it really would be, like psychologically.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, I mean, when I got back, you know, I didn't go to college like everyone else. I missed all the American Pie movie type college scenarios. So I was like, oh, I want to party too. So drugs, women, I became a club promoter, you know, just chasing women all the time and just having fun as much as I could. And, you know, that can destroy you too. You know, it becomes the only thing you care about. You want to get that adrenaline rush. You know what I mean? You want to feel like you're alive, because that's the thing. You lose interest in stuff because you no longer feel like you're alive. So even drama makes you feel alive. You know what I'm saying? So being depressed makes you feel alive. So you want to be depressed. And there's so many problems with PTSD, and it's like that's why 22 veterans kill themselves every day, because they come home, they teach you what to do in the Marine Corps, you follow orders, and then they throw you into the civilian world. Think for yourself now. You've been not thinking for yourself for 4 years, other people longer than that, depending how long they stay, and now go think for yourself. Good luck.
Yeah, it's a very difficult transition for a lot of people to make.
There's benefits, the GI Bill and all this other stuff, but that doesn't guarantee you. I used my GI Bill, but then I quit. So it doesn't guarantee you're going to use it all, because if you're depressed and you don't want to finish anything and you want to kill yourself or whatever, it doesn't matter if you're the GI Bill. So I went through it all, and you know, I find myself when I found the truth about World War II and all the other stuff that, you know, you get you banned and everything. That's the real stuff I learned. And that kind of got my life, gave me purpose to find, oh, these are the real enemies. Holy God. I thought those guys were, I thought the reptilian people, you know, whatever conspiracy I was into, like these are the bankers. Wow. I didn't know about this, you know? And then I got to the white stuff, the pro white stuff, which again, it's not bad to fight against anti-white hate. I still will fight against anti-white hate, but I got sucked into it where race was the only thing at the time. And, you know, I had my own group, the National Youth Front, and people remember me for that. And I don't
regret that. Yes, I remember those days, yeah.
I don't regret that, because that was me going to college campuses with other people and, you know, denouncing anti-white hatred, which would never be allowed if it was races were reversed. These people would be fired instantly. So that was good. So that activism was good. Unfortunately, I affiliated with people that I no longer do. Thankfully, I got away from a lot of toxic people. I learned my lesson from that part of my life. I don't regret it. And to this day, I'll always stand up against any kind of hatred of any people, but it's no question white people are under attack 100% more than everyone else. That's no question. But I went through that phase, and I see beyond the tribalism now. I got out of that box, because believe it or not, that's another box they put you in. You know, let's separate you from all the other slaves and fight each other over race and color and this and that, and then the bankers still win no matter what. So I realized that, and I got out even further. I got away more. So now it's just me doing my own thing. And I got a group of guys doing some other stuff too, but, you know, it's a different strategy. And, you know, people will see as it unfolds throughout the years. But cool. after I got out of the National Youth Front, I just went solo for a while. Got sucked into the MAGA train because I thought Trump was legit, you know, as most people probably did. And then the second he bombed Syria, I was like, no, he's not. And I stopped following him. I just was criticizing him ever since. And then it just kept getting worse and worse, and doing everything for Bibi, the Jerusalem, the Soleimani. I was like, all right, this guy's, forget this guy, he's a liar. He's either compromised or in on it. Either way, it's the same. But that's
And I definitely want to focus a lot of time on talking about Trump for sure. You know, I wanted to ask you real quick, and we'll finish up here, and then I want to talk about your book, and then we'll kind of jump into some more recent events. But you had mentioned how you've reached out to, you know, fellow veterans, or maybe even some like active duty type guys. What has been the response? I mean, how receptive are veterans to these sorts of ideas, like the truth about the wars and, you know, the lies and 9/11 truth, for example? And I don't know if you've gotten into like revisionist history with them as well.
What's
the response? It seems like a lot more people, certainly since, you know, 2013. I mean, we've come a long way. There's a lot more people that are actually receptive to these ideas, or at least open to hearing them. You know what I mean? It seems like that has changed quite a bit. Like back then it was very difficult to talk to anybody about any of this stuff, but now a lot more people are receptive, or at least open to hearing different ideas. And frankly, I do think that Trump has played a role in that.
I do. I give him that. I mean, of course he's done something about the fake news and all that, but yeah, no, the war in Iraq, once they admitted they had no weapons, it really showed people how duped we were. So once you go into the war in Iraq, say, look, we were lied to about Iraq. What other things we've been lied to? And then you just start piecing the puzzles, and it's really easy to convince most Marines or other veterans that we've been lied to. They know. I mean, you're sitting there playing spades in another country, wasting time. You know, like, what are you doing? Some Marines, though, some people, they're too entrenched with their identity. In other words, their ego goes with the story that I was a hero. I saved the Iraqi people no matter what anyone tells me. Or Saddam was a bad person. Not to say he was good, but we did worse than Saddam. They still believe in the stuff like that. They're so indoctrinated, they can't let go. So the more egotistical a person is identifying with their past in the service, the harder it is to get them away from it. But the people I've made aware or my close friends who I keep in touch with, and they understand 100% everything I know, they know. And it's very easy to teach them when they realize that the Iraq War. So once you prove the Iraq War and they've already admitted it was bull crap, it's you just go from there. Start giving them other pieces of the puzzle. You know?
Yeah, it's like you just gotta open one door and then everything else kind of follows, it seems like. For most people anyways.
Once the enemy admits something like, yeah, we screwed up, then that's easy, you know? That's where you start. You go, well, they had already, it's not like you're going against something they don't admit. They admitted it. You know, yeah, we didn't know. We screwed up. We had bad intel. The Israelis gave us this, da, da, da. Go from there, you know, or go to the USS Liberty, then go to whatever else you want.
Yeah.
And just keep going back in time until everything makes more sense than what they're told. And they're like, oh, God. But then it's like, what do you do about
it? I think, yeah, right, exactly. Well, and I think that is a key demographic, like veterans, law enforcement. I mean, this is the exact type of people we need on our side, understanding the reality of the world that we live in, how we've been lied to about all these wars, about history, about everything, you know, and understanding the sort of globalist system that we're now living under, this very anti-white, explicitly in your face, like no doubt about it, like they hate you and they make no bones about it, like anti-white system. Yes. You know, this is the demographic that I argue would be most important in any sort of legitimate resistance to this.
Oh, sure, I agree. And I think that's why they make sure they give us our benefits to keep us docile. But at the same time, they give someone like me my benefit. I'm immune to their financial attacks. You know, there's not going to be anyone taking my job or, you know, silencing me because I get my disability, you know, but you got to fight for it. You got to fight for it. And then that's the thing. The government doesn't want to give it to you. So you got to spend the time fighting for it. You got to prove it, of course. And then also, it doesn't give you it gives you money to live, but not enough to go travel and be like luxurious or anything like that. But you know what? You know, it's better than nothing. But I feel like people, one of the things is, John, people aren't going to step up because they are afraid to lose their jobs. That's why I feel so obligated. I could quit and never be seen again. But I'm obligated to be a voice for people who can't speak, you know. I mean, from all over the world. I got people from Iran who like me. I've been invited to Iran. I was supposed to go to Iran January 20th to go do a speech, but the timing's just terrible. I have a new daughter and the coronavirus stuff. And I was like, I can't come this time. Well, come next time. I'll come next time. So, I mean, the Twitter activism, YouTube has gotten people from around the world to see, wow, a former Marine is anti-war? This is great. So it's not just me fighting for white people or anything. It's me fighting for every good, decent human being who knows who the common enemy is and wants to stop this international banking cartel and everything they're doing to humanity. You know, we're all in this together. So
yeah, that's a good way of looking at it.
Yeah. So all these years of talking on Twitter, I was like, I'm not doing anything. But I, you know, people are like, and you have done stuff. You know, I want to do more. I wish I could do more. But, you know, getting out there and doing speeches would be my first time actually going across the world. It'd be pretty cool. But, you know, I knew one day, I hoped one day, and I also kind of knew it would happen eventually. People would start seeing, you know, what I'm doing and that I have the ability to be that voice for people because they can't really, the only thing to do is kill me at this point, which is fine if they have to. But I'm not afraid to die, John. You know, I've already put my life on the line for falsehoods. Now I'm able to put my life on the line for the truth. And that's an honorable way to go if they ever do something. Again, I'm too little right now. I'm not not like some guy that's a danger to them. But the ADL is obsessed with me. So does the SPLC and Canary Mission. They really, the other day they wrote about me just for tweeting about what happened at the Capitol and calling it a Zionist. Whoa.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, I'm on their crosshairs. They hate what I'm doing because they know I have it right this time. A few years ago, I had it wrong. Now I have it right, and they really are scared of that.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Well, hey, let's move on and talk about your book. Congratulations for publishing it, by the way. It's your first book. I actually bought a copy of a paperback copy from Turning the Tide Publishing. Yes. And if I'm not mistaken, that is the only way to purchase a hard copy of the book, right?
Yeah, it's our mutual friend Dave Gahari.
Yeah, Dave, I know Dave well.
He helped me edit the book. It took 6 months to edit it. That's how hard editing is. You write the book for a year, and then it's 6 months back and forth. Dave's a good friend, so he helped me out.
Cool,
I promised him I wouldn't go to Amazon and paperback because he's my friend. Also, he helped me do it, so to help small businesses. So, yes, the only way to get the paperback is through Turning the Tide. It's obviously on my website, too, angelojohngage.com. Go to my book. But it's also on Kindle, which is cheaper. If you guys want Kindle, it's on Amazon Kindle. There's nothing in it to get banned. You know, it's more like a self-help book. I mean, you've read parts of it or whatever, how much you've read of it. And you'll see that it's really me You get to know me very personally. I talk about my suffering and how to overcome suffering, which will help you and also everyone else reading it, and all these other topics. And what inspired me to write the book, well, really, it just kind of happened, actually. I never planned to do it. And I was just writing notes in my phone with different ideas that came to my mind. And I started compiling a bunch of different like paragraphs and sentences. And I'm like, you know, I'm just going to put this on my computer. And I just kept doing it every day. Next thing you know, I'm like, I'm going to rearrange this and put it in this way. And I kind of wrote similar to Mark. You know who Marcus Aurelius is, the emperor of Rome?
Sure, yeah.
He wrote the book called – it wasn't a book. It was a diary to himself, basically. Self-help, talking to himself, reminding him to be a good emperor, a good Stoic. And it's a classic of Stoic philosophy work. And he wrote – it's not a book. It's like the diary, so it's everything's different order. There's no specific chapters. It's just, you know, book one, book two, book three, just talking about different things. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to write – these. I'm going to take all these paragraphs I've made in different sentences, put them in sections, and each of these sections will have 15 entries. And they're going to be totally unrelated. So there's not going to be chapter one, boring, nonstop, long chapter until you get to a point. It's section one. Every entry is different from another. And it's life coaching stuff, health stuff, political stuff, metaphysical stuff. That's why it's called From the Mundane to the Metaphysical, because it could be, you know, about people using their cell phones too much to, does God exist? So it's a very interesting book. Everyone who's read it really enjoyed it. And they really said how easy it is to read. And I made it easy.
Yeah, that's... That's exactly what I was going to say, because, yeah, you address a diverse and very wide-ranging number of topics, and just, you know, you're offering a lot of good practical advice, yes. Practical observations about any number of subjects, including you mentioned health and just society in general. And then you're also, you know, getting into political topics, philosophical topics, even religious topics to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's very interesting, and it is easy to read. And it's, you know, it's good. It's very good. I was very impressed with it, actually.
Good. I'm happy. I mean, that means a lot, because I liked how I read how Marcus Aurelius wrote his works, or how they were, you know, compiled. It's easy. The paragraph is one thing. Next paragraph is another thing. You're not bored. You know, like I said, chapter one, the revolution. And then it's like 100 pages. And you're like, oh, when do I get to the main part? Or when do the information? I hate reading long books like that. I loved how Marcus Aurelius's book was structured. So I was inspired by that. Plus, I love Marcus Aurelius, so a lot of the things in the book I've learned from him. I put in there from Tony Robbins, Alan Watts, Sadhguru. I mean, I put all these different people who are mystics as well, because I really transcended my religious journey into believing that, you know, the whole universe is basically what you would call God. It makes more sense to me. So it's called pantheism. But anyway, I really transformed a lot, but a lot of it has to do with suffering. And I think that's one thing we all have in common, and one thing we all want to overcome. So, yes, there's a lot of different topics, you know, to change it up. But really, it's to tame your ego. That's the thing that is repeated over and over, is taming your ego, because a lot of the suffering you just make up in your head. You just really do. And that's me. That's what I've done my whole life.
Now you sound like a Buddhist.
Yes. Well, that's essentially what Alan Watts was preaching.
Yeah. Well, I think there is a lot to that, actually. And I think – I mean, you could make an argument that a lot of these same basic principles are found in most religions, including Christianity.
Yes, yes.
But yeah, and you know, and another thing about the book is, and I haven't read the entire thing. I've read most of it. I found it very useful. I mean, it's like practical, right. Useful tidbits, you know, straight from your mind. And yeah, it's good. It's very interesting. So, and I would encourage people to buy the paperback copy, not only to support your work, but also to support small businesses. You mentioned Dave Gaharie's Turning the Tide Publishing. It's, you know, basically an independent book publishing and distribution forum. So yeah, I totally support that, especially, you know, with this great reset unfolding where they're really targeting all these small businesses. So, and definitely we don't want to be supporting Amazon. Give me a break. They're going to ban everything anyway. So
Scamazon is what it is. Scamazon. Yeah. But, I wanted the book to be practical. I didn't want someone to read a book and go, okay, I wanted people to take their NLP exercises in the book that you can do with yourself or another person, actually would be nice, better. But, you know, ways of thinking, looking at things, different perspectives, you can go, wow, and hopefully they click like that and change your mind and perhaps your entire life. Because there's aha moments that change my life, and I put them in there. So if they change my life, maybe they'll change your life. And that could alleviate a lot of suffering, because you need as much energy as you can to do positive in this world. And if you're always depressed and, you know, talking negatively to yourself and have bad memories, it's going to drain you. So a lot of it is so practical that when you read it, it's going to help you alleviate this kind of suffering. And I was on Deanna Spangola's show just a week ago. She loved the book. She was like, oh my God, this is so beautiful. I was like, wow, I got so many compliments before the show started. And I was actually impressed that anyone, like, you know, when I wrote the book, I was like, okay, cool. And Dave is more of like an information guy, so it's not his cup of tea. You know, he liked the book too, but because he read it with me over and over again. But he's more of an information guy. Now, I don't know if he's like Mr. Spiritual that much, but everyone who's read the book has loved it. And I made it to where there are probably parts you don't like in the book. I mean, there's not ever, obviously, but there's some parts you're going to love. So no one's going to say, I hate this book. There's no one, I don't think, could say it. But there's definitely parts people are going to love and really resonate. And one of the things Deanna said was, this so resonates with me. And I'm like, I hope so, because we're all suffering. We're all human. And that's what it is. It's finding humanity. So I really open up in the book and show people who I am. And it comes off as very sensitive, which is true. I do have a sensitive, so I can be very cold too, John. Of course, it's that Marine warrior that can turn on. But when I wrote this book, it took a year to do it. My wife and I were going through the IVF process. And, you know, so I was just kind of like really mellow and, you know, wasn't really doing much. And I wasn't on like testosterone or anything, because I take testosterone for a replacement therapy. I had to get off of that in order to get my wife pregnant. So I was on other medications that make you more calm and more feminine, if you will. So my mind really opened up. So my masculine energy was really leveled with the feminine, right? And so I wrote this book, and it's really philosophical sounding, you know, so... and it was on purpose in a way, but also kind of just happened. And everyone's resonant. So far, people who like it, they've said they liked it. And I was happy to hear. I just did it, though. Again, I didn't plan on doing it. I started writing it 7 days after my grandmother and my friend Nicholas died, just automatically. And I finished it the same year later on those days. Just the same, just no planning, no word tree, bubble tree, nothing. It just kept... So it was very interesting how that worked out.
And when was it actually published? I know it was last year.
Yeah, it was published last year, but it took a year to write it.
Do you know when it actually came out? Like when it was actually like for sale?
Oh, I'd have to remember. I think it was like May or something.
Okay. I was thinking it was like later in the year, like just like last fall, but it was even...
No, it was before the summer. Okay. I mean, I'd have to look at the book itself, but...
I was trying to see if it said in the book. I know it. I think it just says 2020. I don't think it says.
Yeah, I don't think it says. But it was. I finished writing it February 2020, and then me and Dave took 6 months to edit it, and then it was sold. So yeah, okay. Around June. So that's when I started selling it, and I haven't really shilled it. Really, I made one video on my YouTube. I went on JF Greppy's show, Ralph Retort. I went on. We spoke about it. He actually lost the book I sent him, so he read. I think he read some of it or tried to read it, but we didn't really talk about it much. And then this, and Deanna Spangola, and then you. So I haven't really done many shows on it at all. I should be doing more, obviously. But you know, like I said to Dave, I made the book. It was like a personal goal that I didn't even have in mind, but I just did it. And I really don't want to shill it, but he's like, you know, he's going to do an email blast this week. It's just something I did, and you know, I hope it gains traction. But you know how the world is, John. Someone like me or you, we're not going to get best time selling New York Times. It's never going to happen. Those people will never let.
No, not at all. That's fine.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I'm not like, you know, hardcore shilling it. But I want the book to shill itself. So word of mouth, people like it. This is great. You got to get it. You know, and I've already seen that happen. And, you know, again, this is not my destiny to be an author. You know, technically I'm an author now. I want to write another book perhaps one day, probably a political book. Because I talk about the spiritual state in my book. I don't know if you got to that part. A state that works properly. It's the opposite of this. You know what I mean?
Sure. Where there's purpose and people are on the same page and have the same foundations.
Right. There's no two-party system. There's no stupid lobby. None of that. It's how it should be, which has happened in history before. But an upgrade to that.
And so, yeah, you know, you have an interesting, speaking of that, one of the most, I made a bunch of notes of like different sections that maybe we could bring up, but there's one actually on page 16 in section 14, where you talk about like the Republic and how it's dominated by the Republicans and Democrats. And it's like this just basically gigantic scam. And it always has been, at least, you know, for the since World War II, I think you can make a good argument. Maybe even before that. Yeah, maybe even before that, but certainly in our lifetimes and in our parents' lifetimes, probably. And that's so true. And it's something that is so obvious and so basic and so like easy to see, but people just don't. And they're so blinded by the media and so, you know, mesmerized by these totally phony and traitorous politicians on both sides.
Yep. And I do it in a neutral way. A neutral way. I don't pick a side. Like, Republicans are better. I just say, look, this is how it is. So anyone who reads that's going to go, yeah, you know, that's true.
Yeah. It's true. And it's so easy to see, but unless it's, I mean, at least for most people, I mean, most people just, I mean, they don't have the time or interest or even in many cases, intelligence to really sit down and think critically about politics and really, you know, form a firm, independent assessment of what's going on. And for me, I mean, I remember back like when I was in college, way before I was awake to any of these much more controversial issues. I mean, I remember listening to like Ralph Nader and like these third party candidates and like reading books about the Presidential Debate Commission and how they like controlled both sides and only allowed certain ideas into the discussion. And that is, I mean, again, it's like a very easy, basic, like obvious thing, but people, you know, you just don't see it. You certainly don't hear it talked about in the mainstream media and by mainstream politicians, right?
Right. But also, I mean, they'll have like a Tucker Carlson who will be a steam valve to make. He has common sense takes. Oh, Tucker, he's so woke and based. Yeah, but he's just telling you what you should already have known. And it's not anything controversial. Otherwise, you wouldn't have a show. But no, I mean, look, people think the problem with people is the ego. They think they're right. Their side is correct and everyone else is corrupt. So the Republicans go, oh, it's the left people. They're corrupt. And the liberals go, oh, no, it's the Republicans. They're the ones who are corrupt, not us. You know, and the problem is their ego. They're identifying with. So when you identify with something, if someone says it's wrong, you think you're wrong rather than holding a wrong belief, right? Mm-hmm. That's the problem with the ego. So, you know, you tell someone the Iraq war was wrong. Oh, I was there. I was good. You know, but if you're like, well, why is it wrong? Okay. And you disassociate yourself from the Iraq war, from the Marine Corps, from you take your ego and calm it down, tame it, know that you didn't know any better or that you could be duped. You let go of these falsehoods. But a lot of people refuse, you know, the ego, when it's wrong, it's like death. Okay. It doesn't want to be wrong. So it will make up lies. It will deceive itself. It'll protect its narrative at all costs.
It will cope. It will come up with justifications. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. No, I understand.
Exactly. And that everyone does it. So you have to really tame yourself and try not to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. And, you know, I kind of want to move on because there's a lot of topics that I want to get to and get your take on. But I highly encourage people to go out and buy a copy of the book. I will have a link to it where you can purchase it right from Turning the Tide Publishing. And of course, I'll have a link over to your actual website, which is angelojohngage.com. And then, of course, I think most people would be following you on Twitter, assuming we all last, you know, on Twitter. What's weird about Twitter is, you know, I haven't been on Facebook for years, and I really don't do any other social media. But Twitter I've been on, you know, for a long time. I basically use it just to post articles that I find interesting and want to go back and reference or whatever. You know, I'm not on there like tweeting all the time, but it's interesting because I really haven't ever been suspended or had any major problems. I think I've been suspended like once or twice because, you know, I like went off on somebody and started talking about Jews or something controversial. Mm-hmm. And I had to delete the tweet, but I haven't really had many issues. But lately, you know, obviously in the wake of all this, you know, the mayhem in the Capitol and the way the media is spinning it and being so dishonest about it, it's kind of just justifying everything that they've been trying to do for a very long time. And, you know, people are being shut down and purged from Twitter and other social media, including the president. So I wouldn't be surprised if that ultimately happens, but it's kind of weird. I mean, thus far, I haven't really had too many problems on Twitter.
Well, I got verified, so everyone thinks I'm a Mossad agent.
Yeah, I noticed that. Yeah.
that was years ago. I tried to get it verified. They said no the first time. And then I appealed it. I said, look, I'm a public figure. This is when I was in a national. I don't want people impersonating me. I had to give them my license and everything, and they verified me. And I've been verified for years. So, I haven't been. I've had some suspensions here and there, like not bans, like 12 hours here. One I did for 1 week. But I don't violate terms of service, you know. And then I nuke my Twitter a lot, so that there is nothing to report just in case I screw up. But I go hard in the Zionists. They want me off really bad. I mean, they stalk me. Any tweet they could report, they report. And I'll mock them by showing that it didn't go through. But they caught me a few times, you know, over stupid things that had nothing to do with anything. But yeah, I'm probably going to get nuked one day. Once Twitter accepts the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance definition of quote-unquote anti-Semitism, which includes, you know, disparaging Israel or talking about, you know, Zionist power, I'm gone. There's no way. But Twitter has not accepted it or doesn't go through it yet. And the ADL is trying to push them to do it so bad. And there's so many articles on me and other people who are verified that to get them off, da da da. But I really don't violate terms of service. That's really why. But, you know, a lot of people don't realize, well, that guy didn't either. Well, what was he doing outside of Twitter? You know, oh, he had this group. Well, that's probably why. But yeah, I do my best. The most thing is don't harass anyone. If you say get this person, that's when they really get you. But the Zionists hate me so much. They've been stalking me, sending death threats to me. Oh my God, it's crazy.
Wow.
And I get a lot. I've had some viral tweets, but I nuke my Twitter often just to make sure, you know, because they'll go back in time and they'll find something I said, you know, which is fine. I don't take it back, but they'll find any violation. And with these terms of service always transforming, eventually they'll get you. But I don't care. If I get banned on Twitter, I'm done. And by the way, John, if you want to go extra time, I'm available as long as you need me.
Okay. I was going to say, yeah, we're already like 45 minutes.
Yeah.
No, and that's fine. Yeah, I got time too, so we can continue on. Well, I want to talk about COVID. I mean, COVID-19, the COVID-19 quote-unquote pandemic, in my view, is like this totally manufactured political pandemic. It's most certainly not like a genuine medical or like public health crisis or you know, medical pandemic. And it, in my opinion, anyways, the mass media has played and like so clearly continues to play a central role in perpetuating this fraud, which has been used to usher in all sorts of tyrannical agendas, from lockdowns and business closures to wearing a stupid face mask everywhere and taking dangerous and very questionable vaccines. It seems part of this like broader global agenda to usher in a new normal, they call it, and to implement the whole Great Reset agenda that is openly discussed and advocated for by the World Economic Forum and other globalist organizations and their spokesmen. I mean, that seems to be like clearly what they're going for here. And everybody is on board with it. Every single politician at the federal level, at the state level, at the local level. I mean, my God, you could read, you know, the mayor here where I live, you could read like his press releases and they sound exactly like Gavin Newsom, the totally tyrannical, fraudulent governor here. And, you know, everybody's basically saying the same thing. They've all been on the same page. In fact, if you go to my Twitter feed, I have as my pinned tweet, all the top world leaders are on the same page. And it should make you stop and think. I mean, it's a very interesting video where everybody, I mean, all around the world, they're all saying the same thing about this totally fake, manufactured pandemic. So first off, I want to get your take on the COVID situation. I mean, I kind of gave you my take on it. What's your take on the situation? And then I want to discuss your experience with COVID, because from what I understand, you only recently recovered from it, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So first off, what's your take on the situation in general? I mean, do you basically agree with my assessment?
Well, I believe the assessment in regards to the governments, no question. So whether COVID, I don't believe the bat narrative. I think it actually came from Wuhan, probably was engineered. I don't know if it was released on purpose, an accident. I don't know. But I do believe that it's a real virus. I mean, I don't believe it. I know it is because I got it. And people will say, it's fake, dude. You got the flu. No, I know my body. I've gotten the flu years ago. I never get a flu shot. It's totally different. And I know people in my life who got worse side effects lingering to this day. My cousin in Italy, he's a very well-renowned intensivist. That means he works in the ICU, world-renowned. So he's in the medical industry, and he was in Italy when it was hitting hard. I talked to him about it, and I asked him about all these conspiracies. He's like, look, don't listen to all this stuff and blah, blah, blah. But you could argue he's part of the system. He's indoctrinated, whatever. But anyway, the point is I take a balanced look at it. I say I don't care if it's whatever the theory is. I look at what the government's doing. And the government's telling its citizens who's essential and who isn't, and when we'll go back to normal or not. And that's what I'm concerned with. Or, you know, the vaccine, it can't be mandatory right now because it's not even FDA approved. That doesn't mean they're not going to make your life living hell. And this vaccine is questionable. And I know people in the medical industry that are like, I'm not taking it because they don't know what's going to happen. And, you know, technically there should be nothing wrong with it because it's just a protein that tells your ribosomes to make the spikes. But people are getting side effects and all of, you know, there's always side effects to things. So, but I spoke to my psychologist the other day at a phone consult with him. He's like, I'm not taking it. I want to wait and see what happens. So medical people are like, some people are like, I can't wait to take it, you know?
Well, real quick, let me just interject with this. I mean, why – see, and that's the thing from day one, and Trump has played a key role in this. I mean, he's been talking about the vaccine, and they came up with this Operation Warp Speed where they gave like literally billions of dollars to these like global – you know, pharmaceutical companies to develop this, again, very questionable, very dangerous vaccine. A totally like the mRNA vaccine. It's like a totally brand new vaccine that they've really never implemented before. So it's, you know, it's just crazy how they've rushed this out. And it's been the focal point from the very beginning, like clearly like agenda driven, right? I mean, this all like Alex Jones has been talking for years about like forced vaccines and the mark of the beast and all this stuff. And it's like they're almost making it clear like that's what they've been after this whole time, which is very, very suspicious. But at the end of the day, I mean, even according to the government's own statistics, 99% of people recover naturally from it. And yes. I mean, I know people in my own family that have had it and, you know, they were sick. I mean, I think it impacts people differently.
It does.
Yeah. I mean, certain people may be more susceptible, but that's like with any illness. I mean, you know, sometimes like I've been sick with the flu and I've been like literally devastated with the flu for a couple days. And other times, you know, I'll recover, you know, relatively quickly and I won't have, you know, major symptoms or anything, but it just depends. I mean, it depends on your body. It depends on your, you know, your state of mind, your health. I mean, all sorts of factors. And I think this is really no different. And the fact that they've been promoting and like, almost making it seem like it is mandatory to go get a vaccine when, again, this is seems to be a relatively harmless virus. If it's even, you know, actually, I question whether or not they've ever actually even, like, really isolated it. Who even knows? That's the thing. Like, how do we even know any of this is true?
Well, the thing is, John, it wouldn't matter if they did or not. Something's going on. That's what I'm trying to say. I've seen all the arguments. It's 5G. I saw a woman saying the PCR test puts the virus in you. So when you get tested, I've seen all the conspiracies. And like I do with every other conspiracy, whether it's 9/11 or whatever else, I say, look, I don't even care about the details, bat, no bat. But what are they doing with this conspiracy? What are they doing with the crisis? So there's a crisis.
How are they using it to advance this tyrannical agenda?
That's all I care about. You know, that's all I care about. So what are they going to do? Well, the vaccine, first of all, we have a computer programmer who's at the head of this for some reason, Bill Gates. He just all of a sudden is the expert on viruses. Okay. So we got that. Then we got this World Economic Forum, this guy who's like, oh, we're going to do this. Okay. Whoever the hell you are, not even elected. And they're not going to make it mandatory because it's not FDA approved, but they're already talking about passports. You know, they can fire you from work if you don't get it. You're probably going to have all these loopholes to jump to live a normal life. And then, you know, I understand people say, well, the vaccine, then you have to wear the mask anyway. The argument for that is because you have to build the antibodies. All right, fine. But again, does the mask work? Doesn't work? That's another argument. Again, I wore a mask. I still got it. I mean, the thing about this, John, it is highly contagious. It is. Not deadly, but it's extremely contagious. So if it knocks you out for a month, you're not going for work for a month. I got it. All I had was backaches and very, very harsh fatigue. I didn't want to do anything. I'd pass out. My son got headaches. My wife didn't even get it, okay, when she's like right there. My father-in-law lost his sense of taste and smell, and my mother-in-law similar to me. So it's very weird. It's a weird virus, but it's not life-threatening. But, you know, the argument to let it just happen all over the place is, you know, I don't think a good argument. Either way, it would make more sense to me if it was an engineered weapon, and they know it is, and they had to contain it to make all these measures happen. But even if it was the case, they're still going to take advantage of this and say, let's see how far we can go. Let's destroy the middle class, shut down businesses, get all their assets, push these new draconian laws. Let's see how far we could push humanity. John, they're testing us, my friend. They're gathering data. They're seeing what breaking points, how much money they can get away with not giving us. Here's $600. Look what they're doing in the UK. Tier four. What's tier five?
Yeah, you know, I know. It's a huge social engineering scam, basically, to see what they can get away with. Yeah, I totally
believe
agree.
That for 100%. I mean, look, mask or no mask, this thing's contagious, right? The mask will reduce the transmission. How much? I don't know, 20%. Then social distancing, another 20. And then locking yourself in your house until you commit suicide. I mean, another 20. It's not going to stop it. You know what I mean? But it's going to, the whole point's reducing it. They know that. They know they can't stop it. That's what I see from one side.
Well, what's left out of the conversation is what living a healthy life actually requires in maintaining your health. And it's the basics. But the basics don't get the pharmaceutical companies rich. They don't get the doctors rich. They don't like perpetuate this totally fraudulent, parasitic, and exploitative and evil medical system that we live under.
But John, the crazy part is most people want to go to work right now and they can't. So the people they voted for are telling them no. That's ridiculous. That's the craziest part, is that a bunch of people are saying, you're not essential and your life is destroyed. Too bad.
Yeah, exactly. Who decides, as you said, who decides what's essential and what's not? Everybody's essential.
Yeah, Amazon's essential, making billions, trillions. I think they all made like trillions of dollars. All the Elon, Amazon, who else? I forgot. Other company.
Bill Gates. I mean, all of them. That's been a big story. And that's even like mainstream news. I mean, even like the mainstream is like reporting on this, how the wealth consolidation over the course. Well, it's going on a year now since this is all kind of unfolded.
For me, it should have just been put on your mask. Wash your hands, social distance, and just go to work. And that's it. I mean, that's what it should, not lock everyone down, or lock everyone down for 6 weeks and pay everyone everything they need and just knock this thing out just for 6 weeks. Just here's all your money, bills paid, the government, nice stimulus check. I think that's what the Chinese, I don't know what the Chinese did. They really locked it. And they're free, I think. I don't think they have COVID anymore. I'm seeing videos of pool parties in Wuhan. I don't know if it's real, but they really locked it down hardcore. So I would have probably rather have had 6 weeks hardcore lockdown. No one could leave just to get groceries. And you got all your bills paid for 6 weeks. And then this thing would be gone. Instead, they dragged it out. They didn't know if it was real. I mean, all this stuff. I don't know. They didn't handle it right. But assuming this is, you know, a legit thing and people argue it's not. Point is, they, you know, incompetence regardless.
And I disagree. I don't think it's incompetence. I think this is clearly, all an agenda. Yeah. Right. Yeah. This is deliberate.
No, John, I'm saying for us, it would make sense. Let's just, okay, this is a real thing. Lock it. To them, it's like, how can we spread this thing out to the point where we destroy everyone's companies? That's what I think. It's a giant power grab.
Yeah.
I think
I'm
saying if we were in control and we really thought it was real and it was real, okay, here's what we're going to do. Stimulus check for all American citizens, 6 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever. Knock it out. Let's go back to work. Or just here, go to mask, go to work. Make logical sense, not this whole thing, you know. Like my kid, look how stupid this is. My kid, I said he's not going to school. So he did cyber school, right? Whatever this is, online. They want him to get his flu shot, even though he's not in school.
No, that's not, that is not happening. Yeah, I mean, that's insane.
It just doesn't mean, I'm not against vaccines. I do everything very slow. My son's had the flu shot before. But I said the stupidity of that logic. He's not even in school physically, and you want him to get the flu shot, or he'll be disenrolled from his cyber class. That's what I'm angry about. I don't care about the flu. I'm angry about or concerned with the government overreach, telling human beings what they can or cannot do if they put something in their body or not.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is all of this stuff, all of this, like, you know, the government's going to dictate how you have to live your life and what you can and can't do. This is so, like, antithetical to everything that America stands for. It's just so incredible, and they masquerade it all like based on these like mandate. None of it's actually in law. I mean, none of this is, you know, like was debated and passed by any legislature or Congress or anything. I mean, this is all quote unquote mandates and guidance and recommendations, and everybody's saying, oh, look, we have to trust the experts, we have to follow the science. This is all pseudoscience. This is all basically like this technocracy taking over, where like these experts get, and these experts are nothing but shills for these globalist organizations,
vaccine companies,
exactly, and Bill Gates, and this whole agenda. I mean, that's what this is all about. And, you know, you really see this just out in the open now. And it's just, it's mind blowing. I can't even imagine. I mean, if I were a business owner, like say you had like a bar or a restaurant or something and they're telling you to shut down. I mean, and you're just going along with this. I can't believe it. There's a lot of people resisting. Don't get me wrong.
But not enough, though.
No, it's not enough. And the people that are resisting are still like getting the whole book thrown at them, which, I mean, of course, is to be expected. It's just so wrong. I can't believe these people go either going along with it or imagine being like a I don't know. Like, I say you work for like a city government and you're going around enforcing these stupid laws. Give me a break. This is just so disgraceful and shameful that anybody would willingly go along with this agenda.
And John, and they've made it so divisive, even the mask thing. Even like there's a gym in Belmar, New Jersey, down south, where he's not done the masks. Everyone comes out and he's been fined millions of dollars. And he's been famous on the news. You know, he refuses. He doesn't give a damn what Murphy says. It doesn't matter. They shut him down. They locked it, changed the locks, took off the doors. And, you know, I look at the comments, super spreader, killer, murderer.
None of his people
got anything. Now, I take the mid route. Perhaps maybe people are getting it. But I'm in the middle. But you can't be in the middle. You're either with the COVID mask people or you're with the freedom people where there is nothing. I mean, there's always extremes. So I try to make sense in the middle. You know what I mean? My wife was pregnant when this started. So I'm like, I'm not taking risks. I'm going to wear my mask at the gym. Whatever. Big deal for me. You know, but if it's going to destroy my life, shut down my business because Murphy said so, that's crazy. The government that you pay taxes to has said you're not essential. If that's not insanity, I don't know what is. You know, so who are these people? And they're going to decide when what happens. None of us voted for this, John. Just like you said, none of us voted for this. Okay, we agree. We'll shut down our business. Nothing. Then they want to give us $600
for our troubles. Well, hold on. Not only did none of us vote for this, I mean, this wasn't even openly discussed or debated or anything. Right. This was just forced on everybody. And again, it shows you like this. This idea of like the deep state is very real, but it's also like global in nature, you know, as demonstrated by that video that's on my Twitter feed. But also, again, in the point I made earlier, like literally, like you could go anywhere in the world and the local mayor, the governor or whatever, you know, they have in that particular part of the world. Everybody is literally saying the same thing. They all have the same exact talking points. They're all promoting the same exact tyrannical, I don't even know the best way to describe it. It is like a medical dictatorship, like a technocratic, you know, New World Order system that is straight out of like the worst, you know, most tyrannical sci-fi novel.
And the thing about it, John, is that they don't even have to be in on it. They could just, you know, imagine you're a mayor and they go, look, here's the statistics of this virus. If you don't do this, you'll lose 10,000 people a week. What mayor is going to go, oh, I don't give a damn. They're going to do it out of fear. You know what I mean? I don't want my citizens to die, you know, if they're good people or something. So there, a lot of conspiracies don't need everyone involved. Just a few people at the top at the WHO or some other government position. And that's it. You know, and it trickles down.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
That's true. Yeah. And if you look into that, you look into like where these statistics are coming from. It's all based on fraudulent modeling.
Yeah, models. Yes,
and yeah, right. Yeah. And there's a guy, very, very interesting website. It's technocracy.news, I think is the website. Patrick Wood. He's been writing about this sort of stuff and exposing it for a very long time. And I don't agree with everything. I mean, he's kind of, he's got some, I don't know. I think he's off on a few things. But overall, I think his assessment of the situation is one of the best out there. And it's interesting if you look back like at the very beginning, he ties this all into like the whole environmental movement and like the Green New Deal and that sort of thing and the global warming scam. This is basically replacing that. Like global warming was, you know, like basically a totally discredited idea at this point. I mean, they wanted to totally transform the economy and do this and that all based on global warming, and it just nobody buys it anymore. You know, it's a bunch of nonsense that's been thoroughly debunked at this point. And so what are they turning to now? This fake pandemic to justify
this global. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, and that I think makes a lot of sense and is there's a lot of evidence to support that. And, you know, it's only, I mean, like I said, you know, Trump has been going along with this from day one. He's been blaming China. And I mean, God, the guy is so disappointing. China. Yeah. He's been blaming China from day one. He declared the national emergency back in March of last year, you know, which has led to all these lockdowns, justifying all these lockdowns. He's been sort of critical of certain things, like, you know, I guess continuing the lockdowns, and he's been sort of critical of like masks and stuff like that. But overall, he hasn't done anything. He's gone along with this. And again, he's like the main one promoting this whole vaccine idea and giving billions of dollars, if not more, to these, you know, already multi-billion dollar companies anyways. So it's just, it's incredible. It's such a scam. And people are sick of this shit, dude. At least, I mean, I'm in Southern California, and dude, everybody's like so over all this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, that's why they're going to threaten jobs and things like that. I mean, you know, well, the people don't even have jobs anymore, so they shouldn't be threatened anymore. But they've successfully destroyed the middle class, in my opinion. And there's like 40 to 50% of business are not returning. So those people are screwed. I don't know what
that
they're going to do.
That is such a crime, man. Yeah, it's so sad.
It's insane. Again, not voted for. That's like I said. So when it comes to these ideas, whether it's a scam or not, I don't even bother with the details. I just go, what's the government doing? That's what you'll find out. Then you can go back from that. So even if this were a real virus, 100%, whatever, okay, whatever you believe, what are they going to do with it? They're going to just like 9/11, was it a real attack or not? I don't give a damn. I think it obviously was orchestrated, Mossad and everything. But does it matter? What are they doing? They're going to pass Patriot Act that hurts us. They're going to bomb Afghanistan. They're going to invade Iraq and do with it. They're doing something else. So never have a crisis. Never waste a good crisis, right? That's how the government operates.
Yeah, and that's literally exactly what that Jew Rahm Emanuel said. We'll never let a good crisis go to waste.
Yeah.
And that includes real crises and manufactured crises, which I think you can make a very strong argument that this whole COVID-19 pandemic is a totally manufactured, media-created, politically-created crisis. I think it's been and that kind of leads into the next topic is the 2020 election and Trump. I do think that the election was probably stolen from President Trump. I mean, think about it. To me, the most insulting thing about this entire situation is that the media and the political establishment, I guess more or less the political establishment, except for Trump and his supporters, which are few and far between anywhere in the political establishment, but they seriously expect people to believe that 80 million voters went out and voted for Joe Biden, who and Biden wasn't even like this rock star among the Democrats. He was not a very popular figure, even among Democrats. I mean, he's known as like this, you know, corporatist, you know, Democrat that's been in power for his whole entire life, it seems like, anyways. He could barely muster 20 people at his events. I mean, literally, like he had no support. He can hardly speak coherently, for God's sake. So, I mean, that alone, I mean, that's what's so suspicious about it. Despite, you know, everything else, the fact that they're saying that he got 80 million votes, more than Obama, more than any other president.
I know.
You know, it makes no sense. There's no way that President Trump lost this election. I mean, there's just no way, dude.
And the only way he could have is that the pandemic, whether it's real or not, scared people, got people sick. And look, he didn't stop BLM.
No, of course not.
So there's a lot of things Trump did very wrong that people are like, maybe the young kids can. I don't know. I haven't paid attention to the election or the fraud or apparent stuff like that. Because again, either way, they're both Zionists and they always win. So it doesn't matter to me. So I don't care if it was stolen or not. You know, who knows if Trump's first election was stolen from Hillary? I mean, it's very possible. I don't know. I mean, you know who's behind it. Like Mossad has cyber reason and all these technologies and. Who knows? Maybe they were like, whoa, I lost to Trump. You know, maybe, really, I don't know. But there was real energy up behind Trump. I mean, I voted for him then. I'm sure you did too. We all fell for it. But,
even a lot of energy for him this last election.
Was.
Yeah.
There was.
Way more than for Joe Biden and the Democrats. That's for sure.
Well, that's the thing. The weird thing is how, I don't buy either how he got 80 million votes, but I can't explain how. You know, maybe he did win. I don't know. I really haven't paid attention because I've given up on politics. Once Trump bombed Syria, I just no longer cared about any politics. I just gave up on it. But, you know, whether he I made a tweet, which is the reason why ADL put me on their front page, was I said, whether you get Trump back in or not, this is not the tweet. I said something like, you're keeping the Zionist quo. So you guys are all fighting for the Zionist quo. So even if you stop the steal, Trump goes back in or something, it's still the Zionist quo instead of the status quo, Zionist quo.
That's very true.
It's no different. And a lot of people are like, well, Trump will give us four more years. four more years of what? You know, you're not going to reverse decades of Marxist indoctrination in 4 years. So a lot of people, even on our side, if you will, were like hopeful of it. No, it's actually better, realistically, to have Biden win and push the most retarded things as fast as possible to really wake. You're going to tell me this hasn't woken people up, that the two-party system is a fraud? You know, people are pissed, man.
My
have this like think tank, American Third Position, by the way. You can look in a Telegram, and my YouTube has links to it and everything, which I'm working with guys to build something for the future. Our chat tripled the other day, just from this whole Trump. Like, you guys tired of this Third Position? And I put a link, boom, people signing in to Telegram because people are tired of this crap. You know, so it's obvious now that, so if you believe the election was stolen, then you know in your head that it's fake, right? So, you know what I mean? So either way, it's a good thing for those of us who know the solution is not left or right. You know, it's a third position ideology. And that's why for me, I no longer care about any of this stuff. And, you know, the Capitol thing was a tragedy. I don't, you know, here's the thing though, you can't even comment on that without being considered a Trump supporter. Like, you can't comment how you think big tech shouldn't have done that without someone. We're so divided, dude, that anything you pick, people assume things about you. So there is no middle take, you know? If I have a middle take on something, oh, you must be a liberal. No, I'm not. If I have a middle take, oh, you must be a conservative or you must be a Trump supporter. You know, we just saw big tech censor a sitting president for supposedly inciting violence. Now, I asked people, what tweets incited violence? Which ones? Did he say go storm the Capitol, break window? He didn't. He just said march for me or whatever else. Now, of course, he's a coward. He didn't really go anywhere else after that. But what tweet incited violence? What they're doing is because things got bad, they're saying you incited violence. That's after the fact. You know, that's not right. You can't do that. You know, if I say, John, let's go meet at the diner and all of a sudden a fight breaks out, how is that my fault? You know what I mean? We were just going to have some food together, you know? So but someone doesn't like me, so a fight broke out because we were hanging out. That's not my fault or your fault. It's the people's fault who were there. So from what I saw, the protest or the rally was peaceful, and then some guys got in and broke in. They were let in, by the way. I seen footage of cops letting them through the barriers, opening the doors. It was like, this is like a setup, if you ask me. You know, so
yeah, no, I think you're right about that to a certain extent. I think it's, well, I think it's nuanced because, I mean, I think it was ultimately set up for the media to paint this picture and demonize Trump and Trump supporters, and Trump played right into it, which makes me question whether he's been involved in this the whole time and he's just been this actor, which is a very real possibility.
Sure.
Or whether he's just like a totally incompetent, bumbling fool.
Or is an egomaniac.
Or an egomaniac. Yeah, that's
someone with an ego can be played very easily. Someone who has a big ego, you know how he's going to react. He's going to want more people there. You know, let's see. You know, you can really manipulate someone with a big ego. It's very easy.
Yeah.
Because they want everything their way, you know?
And think about like and that's the story of Trump is he wants credit for this. He wants to be known as this great figure. Yeah. He wants credit for the vaccine. He wants credit. So yeah, that's clear. That's just part of his personality. But I think what's telling is, I mean, think about it. When he announced the rally that was going to be taking place just on Wednesday, on January 6th, on Twitter, he said, you know, he called all of his supporters to gather in Washington, D.C. to attend this rally, which he explicitly described was going to be wild. He said on Twitter, this is going to be wild. And then at the end of the speech, he said, we're going to march down Pennsylvania Avenue to the Capitol, like implying like, I'm going with you. I'm leading you to the Capitol. Yeah. We're going to show these Democrats I think he was actually more directing the energy towards the Republicans that weren't standing up for him. But either way, I mean, he did direct those people to march down Pennsylvania Avenue to the Capitol. And I think, I mean, I sympathize with like the spirit. And I think there were probably, you know, like 10 to 1, like genuine America First Trump patriots. And a lot of people, it was bigger than Trump. I mean, this is about our republic, our constitution, about the integrity of our elections, all of that. I mean, I think this sort of transcended Trump to a certain extent anyways. And I think there were probably more genuine people than, you know, phony people, obviously. But there were, it seems obvious at this point that there were a lot of provocateurs and instigators. And as you said, you know, the Capitol Police in some cases seemed to be like letting these people in. So the whole thing was like almost a media, a perfect media creation or like a media setup event to demonize us and to demonize Trump and all of his supporters and to justify this totally tyrannical agenda, which it is becoming very clear now. I mean, look at like Lindsey Graham. He's saying we're going to how much money does the Joe Biden administration need to investigate and arrest all these people that stormed the Capitol? These insurrectionists and these terrorists that stormed the Capitol.
That's the ultimate gaslight, is calling it an insurrection.
Yeah, I know.
I tweeted, I said an insurrection, a real one, would have been armed. There would have been massive casualties on both sides. If they got into the Capitol, they would have had hostages and demanded things.
Yeah,
all we had was a bunch of people. Like I said, most of them were patriots for Trump. They believed in everything, the president. They truly believe their republic is under attack. A lot of them were sent by QAnon. Obviously, there were shills there. There were people wearing Camp Auschwitz shirts, probably neo-Nazis that weren't, you know, just there for whatever. It was what happened. They get into the Capitol, they take selfies, they take some stuff, and then they say go home, and they went home. That's not an insurrection. Yeah, they broke public property. One woman got killed, Ashley Babbitt, which died for no reason, and people are mad at me for not making her a martyr. She's a victim. She's a victim. I can't say she's a martyr because I don't agree with what she died for. I don't believe in that cause. She died for a con artist. She died for a Zionist president. You know, she died for someone who lied to her, who hasn't even mentioned her name from what I understand, hasn't said a single thing about her. He doesn't care about Ashley Babbitt. She's a victim, not a martyr, because I don't believe in the cause she died for. But
yeah,
people do and say, oh, she's a martyr, whatever. Okay, she was murdered and there should be justice for her. But someone's going to say, well, she shouldn't have gone to the Capitol. Blah, blah, blah. There's going to be all these arguments. At the end of the day, John, this president, he went along with Q also, General Flynn as well. They played this Q thing. Alex Jones, he's saying Q is fake now. He's saying it's fake, but he was promoting Q the whole time until now, right, to the very end. These people were misled. They were misled. They were patriotic. They were misled, and they were betrayed. Because now Trump said they should get punished at the fullest extent of the law. Now, you look at now, what's the number one priority? Stopping white supremacy.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. This is a total setup.
They gave this Biden administration to stop white supremacy. A lot of Jewish Americans behind this. We got to stop white supremacy. Even though I saw Jews at the White House blowing a shofar through the window, I saw a nice big Israeli flag being waved. That's why I said the Zionist quo. So they're acting like, there's just white supremacists there. There was all kinds of people there. You know, we all know Trump supporters are of all races, of all, many Jews like Trump because he's a super Zionist. So to say it's white supremacy is disingenuous. To call it an insurrection is the ultimate gaslighting.
Yeah.
So that's
are the same people that are calling this an insurrection that justified and excused the violent, like genuine riots and genuine insurrection carried out by Antifa and BLM over the course of this entire year.
This is insane.
Yeah, no, I know.
It drives you crazy because you know it's hypocritical.
It does. It's so infuriating.
And someone got mad at me. She's like, why don't you make Ashley a martyr? They used George Floyd. Then left. I don't want to be like the left. I'm not going to use these people for your agenda. No, this woman is a victim. You know, her husband's probably devastated. And for what? A con man? A Zionist con man? Get out of here. But yeah, she believed her republic was under attack. She believed all this. But it doesn't mean it's true. You know what I mean? And maybe it is true if you believe it was stolen. I don't know, John. I didn't look into it. I've seen videos. But the problem is Trump's own judges were like, no, your case is thrown out. His own people he appointed were like, no, Mr. President, you're wrong. You know, you heard the phone calls. So it's just like either they're all against Trump. But Trump did so much for the Zionists. I don't see why they would throw him under the bus. But that's how they work, though. They use you like a prostitute and throw you to the side. I don't feel bad for Trump. I mean, you know, when he was banned, I was laughing because he never was there for his people. Not that he was banned and it's good for big tech. I'm like, ha, monitor the situation, you know, because all of his people getting deplatformed, banned, shut up, and he did nothing.
He didn't even do anything. This was all accelerated under his own administration. Yes. I mean, it's insane.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a lot of weird stuff, like Epstein being killed under his administration with Barr. That's weird. You know what I'm saying? Like, come on, really?
Yeah.
I don't trust any of this. So Trump could have been compromised from day one. Maybe he meant well and they showed him JFK video. I think that's what happens a lot. But, you know, he was in bed with Zionists from day one. I mean, Adam Green goes into this with his father and all this stuff. I mean, he owed banks billions of dollars. Adelson is his top donor. I mean, you know, for all we know, he's been controlled the whole time. We want to believe he wasn't. But either way, again, John, goes back to my philosophy. I don't care what the theories are. I look at the results. So if he was a good person, he's still compromised. If he was a shill from day one, still it doesn't matter. Same results. That's why I avoid debates. I avoid arguments because I don't care. I said, well, what's the result? Oh, he betrayed his base. Oh, he did nothing for the people silenced. He bombed Syria. Oh, he killed Soleimani. Oh, he's – come on. I don't care what the argument is anymore.
Well, and see, that's the thing. And that's the thing I've been really saying from day one. I mean, like everybody really, when Trump first stepped on the political scene, he was such a – different, totally different, like, actor, totally independent to a certain extent, but just, he really was like a wild card. I think he changed politics, and I think that's something that we could, you know, be thankful for and celebrate with his administration, his candidacy, just his presence in politics in general. Yes. I think he did wake up a lot of people, but at the end of the day, I think, and this is always what I've been saying, is he had so much potential to do so many good things. I mean, he was saying a lot of good things. He had all the right ideas, at least, you know, more or less anyways. I mean, just the basic things that he ran on, building a wall, deporting illegal aliens, you know, making America great again, putting America first, getting us out of these globalist trade deals. I mean, all of that would have been a huge step in the right direction. And he just basically failed to do anything. Yeah. And, you know, again, he was working against the entire establishment from the beginning, but I don't know. It's tough, but at the end of the day, especially given what has happened since Wednesday, I mean, he tells all of his supporters to come to DC, says it's going to be a wild event, asks them to walk, you know, to march to the Capitol, and then just throws everybody under the bus afterwards. Mm-hmm. It's like, how do you not conclude that he is an actor involved in all of this from the beginning? That's really kind of where I'm at right now.
Yeah, the word wild could be like, it's going to be fun and crazy and wild. But I mean, he didn't do it. You know, he didn't do anything to help his people. Again, to this day, I don't think he even mentioned Ashley Babbitt. I don't even think he said, I'm sorry for a lot. I don't know what he can't. It's his fault, essentially. But, yeah, John, like I said, he could have been in on it day one. He could have maybe changed. They showed him Kennedy tapes. Maybe he was on Epstein's Island. I don't know, man. We could speculate all day. But all I care about is his results. And the second he bombed Syria, I was gone, dude. And that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
So ever since then.
2017, yeah.
Yeah, and I kind of was like, okay, well, Angela, he bombed an airstrip. All right, maybe 4D. Then he bombed it again. Okay, no, not this time. And then Soleimani, this is now recently Soleimani and all this other stuff. And no, he's done, man.
Well, even going back to his original inauguration, when Antifa like literally burned down Washington, D.C. for the first time, or at least the first time in his you know, presidency, his administration, all these people were let off the hook. Yeah, I mean, he didn't do anything. He let this happen. And, you know, all of these people were basically had all of the charges against them dropped. And that has been a theme of his entire administration, like the media and the establishment justifying BLM violence and protests and rioting and looting. And then, you know, totally flipping the script and calling what happened on Wednesday an insurrection and terrorism. I mean, it's so insane. It's so incredible. And again, he's, I don't know, maybe willingly, maybe he's been part of this. That's what it certainly seems like at this point. He's gone along with this and facilitated all of this and allowed it all to happen under his watch.
Yep. And again, people who are pro-white and stuff were like, oh, he's our guy. He's going to save. The only time he said white, I think, was that interview. We said, well, white people are getting shot too. You know, what a light. That's one time in 4 years he said that. You know, it's like people take table scraps. Oh, he doesn't care. And now, you know, he's throwing everyone under the bus. And here comes Biden with this white supremacy thing. And they're going to come down hard, man. I guarantee I'm going to be called a domestic terrorist. I already told my wife. They're going to, who knows what's going to happen. I haven't done anything. I never did a crime in my life. But they're going to use this label loosely, man. They're going to throw it on everybody, no questions.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and yeah, and they seem to, and they've always, the establishment, definitely the left and the Democrats, they have wanted revenge against Trump from the moment it was announced that he won the presidency. And, you know, yeah. I mean, they've tried to impeach him. They've created one scandal after the next, all manufactured, all fake. And this past year, the 2020 in general, really kind of epitomized everything. I mean, there's actually an opinion in Haaretz that I retweeted. Georgia's glorious black Jewish alliance triumphs over pro-Trump mob. Mm-hmm. And that really kind of encapsulates the entire year, the entire past year, and what's ultimately, you know, happened over the course of the past week or so. I mean, this has been a minority, like Jewish and you know, black, basically, alliance tearing down America openly and then calling what happened on Wednesday an insurrection. I mean, yeah. Talk about flipping the script. I mean, this is like clown world on steroids. And again, Trump has facilitated all of this, I think.
He's weak. Even if he didn't facilitate it, he did nothing to stop the riots and Black Lives Matter. He did nothing. He didn't even stop anything. I think he didn't even tell the National Guard to come in. I think it was Pence who did it. I think Pence did it or something.
Oh, you mean just recently? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think Trump didn't even stop that. Either way, he's just, I don't know. At the end of the day, people are like, he's the best president in the world. No, he's not. He's not. And none of them are, John. I don't care for any of them, honestly. I think JFK was the last one. And he was eliminated for many reasons. But my hope in American politics with these parties, I don't care at all. I that's why I'm working on my own thing and with loyal people who really want to make a difference in this world. And it's going to take time. It's going to take time. And honestly, the enemy has to gain more power to make that vacuum. And I think with Biden and Kamala and all these crazy things, it's going to push people into a corner where they're not going to care about losing their jobs anymore. They're going to get out of their comfort zone. So long as we're comfortable and scared, you know, at the same time, no one's going to do anything. So the silver lining from this insane riot or whatever you want to call it, people are showing that they're not afraid anymore. And that's good. So there's a silver. The problem is they're being herded in the wrong direction. That's the problem, in my view. So
that's a good way to kind of wrap this up.
It's the first time we've seen the right do something like that, really. You know, and I'm not left versus right guy. I don't care. I'm just saying, finally, the right has said we're going to actually do something instead of cry on Twitter. You know, the left's been doing it all the time. Antifa, you know. So there's a silver lining there, but the country's still divided. And the puppeteers are still doing what they're doing. So we have a lot of work to do for the future. But I think a Biden administration will accelerate that learning process rather than Trump being put back in or something by some miracle. So I'm fine with Biden, even though I know it's going to get worse, because I know it has to get worse. I know history repeats itself. And this is just part of the growing pains we have to go through until we can truly free our country from the parasites.
Yes, yes, that's true. Very well said. And I think one telling sign and one encouraging sign is that this has really discredited the Republican Party.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, these people, all the enthusiasm on the right was for Trump.
Yep.
And the GOP has totally, totally turned its back on Trump. I mean, they basically have from the beginning, but now it's become very, very clear. I mean, and again, what's interesting is how this you know, quote-unquote siege of the Capitol happened right as all of these representatives and senators were getting ready to voice their objections to the electoral voting process and to expose what was really, you know, that was part of the whole thing on Wednesday. And they totally interrupted that. And then, you know, they clear the Capitol, they reconvene, and all of the Republicans are saying, oh, no, now, you know, we're going along with this. We're not going to object. You know, Joe Biden's president. This is a disgrace. Yeah. Throwing Trump under the bus. So I guess at the end of the day, it is good because, I mean, the GOP does need to be discredited, and people got to realize that this whole entire duopoly system is totally fake and gay and controlled by Jews. And that's it. I mean, that's it in a nutshell. And until you realize that, nothing is going to change.
Yeah, that's why I say to people, you know, just get ready for what's coming and stop with this hopeful QAnon, trust the plan garbage. It's over. let it happen. Let the enemy has to make their moves and overplay their hand, and they've always overplayed their hand. That's one thing we know about them, and I expect them to do it again and very soon, and hopefully people wake up. And if they don't, then we deserve what's coming, and we deserve to be enslaved, and that's the end of us. Yeah. That's really what it comes down to. There's no other way. Enjoy your life and say goodbye. That's really it. But there are people like myself and others who are working together to create an American third position platform and system where we can, legal, everything's legal. We want to do something in the future. So when you guys want to follow me on Twitter, there's also American Third Position on YouTube. We have a Telegram chat, all this stuff. We're trying to get people involved, educated on another option that people don't know about. And that's what I think is the future. And this is definitely creating a vacuum for that. People are now seeing this two-party system, this duopoly, as you called it, is a sham. Whether you believe what happened or not, it's still, if you're a liberal, you should still believe it's a sham, because Trump's a sham, right? In your eyes. So that's fake. And if you believe Trump got a stuff, the other side's fake. So either way, both sides have to agree it's messed up and we should probably fix it, but they don't have the right strategy to fix it. So.
Right. Well, Angelo, thanks, man. We'll go ahead and wrap up. I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. It's been a good chat, as I knew it would be. Your website, again, is angelojohngage.com. You're on Twitter at angelojohngage. And your book, From the Mundane to the Metaphysical, Observations and Reflections on Life, is available from Turning the Tide Publishing. So please do go out and pick up a copy of the book. Great book. Very interesting. So, yeah, man. Thanks. I appreciate it, dude.
All right, John. Good talking to you, man. Hope all is well, and I'll keep in touch, brother.
Okay. Sounds good, man. Have a good night.
You too.
Okay.